On this episode, we review diabetes, from preventing it to what's possible for getting a medical certificate. All on this episode of the Mayo Clinic Clear Approach Podcast, your home for aerospace medicine that matters.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Mayo Clinic Clear Approach Podcast. I am Mitch Nelson.
And I'm Clay Cole, your medical co-pilots, coming to you from Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, where the pattern is clear, the wings are all level, and the AMEs are all above average. According to the American Diabetes Association, more than 38 million American adults have been diagnosed with diabetes, including nearly 30 million diagnosed, and maybe more importantly, almost 9 million undiagnosed. You know, more than a million new cases are diagnosed each year, and it's the eighth leading cause of death in the United States. It's estimated that care for diabetes runs more than $400 billion per year. And much like the national population, the prevalence of diabetes is higher in the pilot population than one might expect. Today, we have the opportunity to visit with an endocrinologist, an expert in diabetes, and then discuss the aeromedical implications of this condition.
With me today is Dr. John Morris, an expert in diabetes care. Tell us a little bit about your career and what you're up to these days.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me. As you said, I am an endocrinologist. In fact, I just very, very recently retired after 38 years in the endocrine division at Mayo Clinic. And for 10 years of those, I was the chair of the division of endocrinology. And I have, as my career, taken care of many, many patients with diabetes and thyroid disease and other endocrine disorders. It's nice to have moved along a little now. And I also am a private pilot and fly a Bonanza and have a little more time to get out and do that. But I'm still very much in touch with endocrinology and diabetes care, as I have been for 3.5 decades and more.
There are many pilots out there, and they are very aware of diabetes and don't really understand how it can affect the body. Can you tell us a little bit more about diabetes and why it seems to be such a big deal in terms of preventive screening and for pilots?
Yeah, so I think the simplest definition of diabetes is that it's elevation of the blood sugar, the glucose level in the blood, because it's not properly handled by the tissues and the organs, and especially the pancreas that produces insulin to control the blood glucose level. In its very mildest form, it really causes no symptoms, at least early in the course.
Okay.
In other words, persons don't notice when their blood sugar is elevated. So in order to diagnose diabetes, it's important to measure the blood sugar and to follow it over time. But it's also more important in the long term because this elevation of the blood sugar causes toxic effects on various organs and tissues in the body and leads to very serious chronic complications of diabetes, including, perhaps most importantly, increased risk of heart attack, stroke, cardiovascular disease, and early death. It also can cause problems with the nervous system, with the function of the peripheral nerves. It can cause impaired sensation in the feet and hands and other areas. It can cause injury to the kidneys that can eventually cause the kidneys to fail. And it can cause injury to the eyes that can impair vision, very importantly. Fortunately, these complications of diabetes can be prevented effectively by keeping the blood sugar under control. And this, of course, is the reason that it's important to diagnose it and treat it early so that these long-term complications don't develop from the toxicity of the elevated blood sugar.
So pilots are required to have, pilots with diabetes, are required to have a hemoglobin A1C test done. What exactly is this test and how is it accomplished?
Hemoglobin A1C is a very important test for monitoring the effectiveness of the treatment of diabetes. Technically, hemoglobin A1C refers to an attachment of the glucose molecule to the hemoglobin molecules in the red blood cell. And these glucose molecules become attached more frequently when the blood sugar is elevated. So as the blood sugar remains high, the percentage of the hemoglobin molecules that have glucose attached to them goes up. That's called the hemoglobin A1C. And the goal is to keep the percentage of those hemoglobin molecules that have glucose attached to them low. As you said, below 9%. That's okay. The goal for approval of the FAA exam, for example. But it's also important in the management of diabetes and preventing those long-term complications, because keeping the hemoglobin A1C low implies good control of the blood sugar, and that reduces the risk of developing complications of diabetes.
We often see pilots with glucose intolerance, or what the FAA calls prediabetes. If I'm a pilot with slightly elevated fasting blood sugar, but a normal hemoglobin A1C, what is the most effective way to prevent me from developing full-blown diabetes?
Elevation, mild elevation of the blood sugar, which can be called prediabetes or glucose intolerance or elevated fasting blood sugar, is a precursor to the development of frank diabetes, which is defined as a more significant elevation of the blood sugar. Prediabetes is more common in persons that have a few extra pounds, have extra body fat, in other words, are obese. And so one of the most important and efficient ways of keeping the blood sugar under control or lowering it back down is to keep the weight under control and lose weight. Modifying the diet to reduce the amount of concentrated sugars in the diet. Exercise can be very helpful because it improves the uptake of blood sugar out of the bloodstream into the muscles and other organs. You know, the short answer, but the effective answer, is diet and exercise.
All right. So, we've talked about prediabetes. Tell us a little bit more about type 1 versus type 2 diabetes.
So generally, there are two broad categories of diabetes, as you said, type 1 and type 2. Type 1 diabetes is what has in the past also been called juvenile onset diabetes or insulin dependent diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease in which there is an attack by one's own immune system against the cells in the pancreas that produce insulin. And that attack destroys those cells so that the ability of the pancreas to produce insulin declines and eventually goes away completely. So persons with type 1 diabetes, which can also be called autoimmune diabetes, have no insulin production from their pancreas eventually, and are therefore required to take insulin to be happy and healthy, even to survive. Type 2 diabetes is a very different mechanism of elevation of the blood sugar. It's much more common. It's about 10 times more common than type 1 diabetes, and it has in the past been called adult onset diabetes. It's not an autoimmune phenomenon, at least for most patients, it's not, and it has more to do with the effect of the insulin on the peripheral tissues, the organs, in other words, like the liver and the muscles, so that those organs don't respond correctly to the insulin that's present in the bloodstream. We call that insulin resistance, so that the insulin is still there, at least much of it is, but it doesn't work as well. And so the blood sugar becomes elevated because of that.
Metformin is a drug that many of the pilots that we see use as a medication to help control blood sugar. How does that drug work, and is it relatively safe?
Metformin is by far the most common medication, especially first medication, that's used to treat type 2 diabetes, which, as I said earlier, is much more common than type 1 diabetes. It has its effect, especially on the liver and other peripheral tissues like muscle, to improve the uptake of blood sugar by improving the resistance to insulin. In other words, improving the action of insulin on those organs, so that it allows the tissues to take up glucose from the blood more efficiently, lowering the blood sugar and utilizing the blood sugar better. So it directly affects many of the metabolic abnormalities that are the cause of type 1 diabetes. It's a very effective medication. It's still, even today, after many decades of use, one of the most effective medications that we have, and it's very inexpensive. It has very few side effects for most patients. It does not lower the blood glucose to the point that it causes it to go too low, what we call hypoglycemia. So it's a very good and effective medication, a very safe medication, and one that is still very highly utilized after probably five decades of use.
Very good. And, you know, what are some of the downstream effects of type 2 diabetes?
The downstream effects, we would use the word complications of diabetes to describe that. And I referred to this a few minutes ago. It has to do with the toxic effects of elevated blood glucose over many years on the organs and tissues. It can affect the eyes, especially the retina of the eyes, causing vascular injury to the eyes so that eyesight is threatened. It causes injury to the kidneys, to the portion of the kidneys that's responsible for filtering the toxins out of the blood, and it can lead to kidney failure over time. It causes toxicity to the nervous system, especially the peripheral nerves, like the nerves that are responsible for sensation in the feet and the hands, and can cause numbness in the feet and hands, which can lead to injury to the feet and hands and chronic sores and ulcers that can lead to infections that can even threaten the limbs. Also, the elevated blood glucose increases the risk of cardiovascular disease. It increases the risk of atherosclerosis, increases the risk of heart attack and stroke. So there are many toxic effects of this high blood glucose over time. And of course, that's why it's important to manage diabetes effectively to keep the blood glucose under control. It's been very well shown that keeping the blood glucose in the target range for hemoglobin A1C and the blood glucose targets for those patients, it's been very well proven that doing that will effectively reduce or prevent those complications.
Are there any warning signs that a pilot or an individual would maybe see in routine or daily life that would maybe indicate that they should be checked for diabetes?
The symptoms of diabetes, the classic symptoms of diabetes, are what we call polyuria, polydipsia, and weight loss. In other words, excess urine, getting up many times during the night to go to the toilet, being thirsty all the time because you're losing so much urine all the time. And despite all this glucose and water and food coming in, losing weight. Those are the symptoms of diabetes. But in fact, most patients that have mild or moderate diabetes don't have any symptoms. And so it's important to monitor the blood glucose when you have your checkups with your providers to keep an eye out for it, especially if you're a bit overweight, especially if you have a family history or other risk factors for diabetes.
Definitely a reason for preventive health screenings to stay on top of that. Relatively recently, the FAA has allowed under special issuance authorization certification, pilots with type 1 diabetes are now being monitored with continuous glucose monitoring. How does that work for pilots in the cockpit?
Yeah, it's been a major change in the ability of patients with diabetes to be pilots over the last few years because of the availability of this technology called continuous glucose monitor. A CGM, continuous glucose monitor, is a device that attaches to your skin and has a little needle that goes under the skin into the subcutaneous tissue. And through an electrical mechanism, it monitors the glucose level in the tissue fluids under the skin, which correlates with the blood glucose level about every 10 seconds. And so it gives virtually a continuous readout of the blood sugar. And so it's very helpful to have that information, especially for persons that have forms of diabetes that require insulin, for example, where the blood sugars may go up and down a bit more rapidly and more frequently. These devices, by their continuous monitoring function, are able to give warnings to patients when their blood sugar goes outside the range, especially if it goes outside the range on the low side, predisposing to hypoglycemia that can impair brain function and even consciousness, so that these devices can warn the patient, the pilot, if their blood sugar is getting out of range so that they can do something to bring it back up or bring it down if it's too high. So this technology is very reliable. It's very well established now. And for about the last 4 years, I think it was around 2020 or so, when the FAA finally made approval for persons to have class 1 and class 2 medical exams that are taking insulin. Even patients with type 1 diabetes, pilots with type 1 diabetes now can fly commercially if they're under good control and use a continuous glucose monitor.
How does the insulin pump work for those pilots?
Well, the insulin pump is another device, although there are now hybrid devices that can include both a monitor and a pump. But technically, a pump is a way of delivering insulin. The old-fashioned way, of course, of delivering insulin is with a needle and a syringe. But nowadays, with these continuous pumps, another little needle goes under the skin, and the pump, you wear it like a pager. It's about the size of a pager these days, and it has a reservoir of insulin in it. And it continuously delivers a small amount of insulin 24 hours a day. And then at mealtimes, you push a little button on the machine, and it delivers a bolus of extra insulin to cover the glucose changes that happen after you eat a meal. So it's a way of delivering the insulin more continuously, more smoothly, and without the need to poke yourself several times a day.
But definitely changes the quality of life for a number of people where they can have to think less about it and then also becoming very aware of their blood sugar levels and insulin throughout the day.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, they work very well. The technology has improved much through the years. Insulin pumps have been around for probably close to 30 years now, and the technology is much better with the modern pumps than in the past. The control of the blood sugar can be better for many patients with insulin pumps. Not all patients. Many patients, if they're very meticulous, can do well with needles and syringes, and there's still patients who do that and do it very well. But for many patients, as you said, it is an improvement in the quality of life and an improvement in the efficacy of the management of the disease.
You know, there's a number of medications out there, and we've seen on TV and through advertisements, medications, you know, obviously to lower blood sugar levels and treat diabetes, but also now being used for weight management. A lot of information out there. Tell us more about the drugs to help you lose weight and lower your blood sugar, or both.
So there's been an explosion of new medications to manage diabetes during the course of my career. When I first became an endocrinologist, we had insulin and we had some oral sulfonylureas, and then metformin came online just early in my career. But now there are probably two dozen FDA-approved medications out there for the management of diabetes. And some of the more recent ones can have very significant effects on appetite, on the emptying of the stomach and the movement of food through the GI tract. And through those mechanisms, in addition to their effect on insulin secretion and insulin action, can cause weight loss or help induce weight loss. And of course, for patients, especially with type 2 diabetes that tend to be overweight as part of the cause of their disease, losing weight can be very helpful in the management of the diabetes as well. So these medications have become very popular. They generally are very well tolerated and safe. They typically do not lower the blood sugar below the normal range. And so unless a patient is taking insulin along with it, they don't tend to lower the blood glucose too much, so they don't cause hypoglycemia. And some of them have also more recently been approved by the FDA, not just for treatment of diabetes, but also to induce weight loss in the absence of diabetes. And they can do that very effectively. And of course, they're very popular in the media and in Los Angeles and at the Oscars and so forth. Mm-hmm. You hear much about them these days, but they are very effective medications, very exciting medications. And I think it's fair to say that their use in the general population in the absence of diabetes is still at least somewhat being sorted out.
Well, you being a pilot as well, and can you think of any reason why, if you take these medications, is this something that needs to be reported to the FAA if you're using it for weight loss?
So yes, of course it needs to be reported because it's a prescription medication. So all prescription medications need to be reported as part of the FAA medical exam. But they can be approved for use, especially if they're taken in the absence of insulin. The risk of hypoglycemia or other significant side effects is quite low with them in the absence of other medications that might lower the blood glucose too far, like insulin, for example.
So it's important to work with your AME when you're discussing these medications for weight loss and your FAA medical application.
We hope that the information shared today on the podcast has been useful, keeping in mind that with a little forethought, organization, planning, and compliance with recommended treatment, that many, in fact, most pilots will be eligible for medical certification. Part of the aeromedical certification puzzle is finding an aviation medical examiner who is willing to partner with you to get the required information to the FAA in order to help expedite your safe return to the sky. Thanks for joining us today on the podcast, and we look forward to having you join us on future episodes. Remember that if you encounter a health-related question pertaining to your aeromedical certification, be it diabetes or any other medical problem, you can reach our Clear Approach website at clearapproach.mayoclinic.org for an online consultation, and send your comments and suggestions for future podcasts to clearapproach mayo.edu. Soft landings, and make it a great day.